We'll call the meeting open this evening, our February 3rd edition of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Meeting is now called to order. Could we have a roll call, please?
Elder?
Present.
Donaldson?
Present.
Miller? Wendt?
Here.
Steele?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Struthers absent.
You have been provided with a tentative agenda for tonight's meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to this agenda? Seeing none, all in favor of the approval of this agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Disapproved, same sign. The meeting, the agenda is approved. We will delay approval of the minutes of December 2nd due to not enough members present that were actually in attendance at that meeting. And we will go on to item 4, the January 6th minutes of Planning and Zoning. If there are no, are there any corrections to this, to those minutes? If no corrections, they stand as approved. This is the time for public comment. Is there anyone present who wishes to address the commission regarding matters that are not on the agenda this evening? This is your time. Seeing none, we are moving to six, tabled business, the Natty subdivision. Is there any further information that needs to be, and there's no one in attendance to address that this evening, I assume?
Correct.
So we will move on to number 7, old business. 7.1 is the subdivision 1213 Cameron Estates. We'll begin with staff presentation.
Okay. Instead of going over the presentation that we gave last month, as you'll recall, the commission did remand this back to staff and did ask for some additional information, both staff and the applicant. I'm just going to go over those areas that you asked for and try to give you the best update I can based off what we've received so far. I'm assuming everybody got the memo that I put together outlining that stuff. So again, I'm just going to kind of summarize what we put in that memo there. First of all, there was some concern over the proposed septic systems that were going to be out there and the site evaluation that has yet to be done. As we had mentioned last month, a site evaluation is part of the SNOW requirements for a subdivision plat. However, with the weather that we have right now and the frost level of the ground, it's nearly impossible to get out there and do those site elevation or evaluations. So we're kind of in that time, I guess, in that time of season where it is hard to do those. However, we did talk with Surrey County Environmental Health Director Margaret James. She has looked at the soils. The applicant provided some information on the soils as well that was, I believe, attached to your application or the packet this evening. There's really no concerns with any of the soils that are out there right now based off what we're able to see. So right now there really isn't too much of a concern for any problems that are going to arise with septic systems. However, there was, I think, 6 bullet points that Ms. James asked us or wanted to inform the commission of as part of that site evaluation that needs to be done. First of all, if the soil is not consistent, she's asking for additional borings, which would be more than the 2 that the applicant noted would be necessary. Second, the soil perk rates will need to be determined either by field estimates based on soil texture and structure or by conducting perk tests. Third, that the site evaluation shall make a recommendation for the septic system type. The applicant did touch on this, but designate an area 50 feet wide by 100 feet long along the contour or an area appropriate for the size of the proposed secondary system for each lot. And lastly, she was recommending that the applicant does provide covenants that cover the maintenance of the septic system. As we had noted in that paragraph, if conditions do allow, staff would prefer to see that site evaluation submitted with the final plat. However, if the final plat does come forward before soil conditions would allow, that's where we'd like to see that development agreement come in and have the development agreement at least lay out exactly how we're going to do that site evaluation and when we're going to do that site evaluation. So either way, we're either going to have the site evaluation submitted with the final plat or have some agreement that the Board of Supervisors and the applicant will enter into that outlines how that's going to be done. But overall, with the septic system, I guess, from staff standpoint, I would say just with the soils that are out there and in the conversations that we've had with the health department, there probably isn't going to be too much of a concern on there. However, the due diligence does need to be done yet on that particular area. Looking at the utilities, as you'll recall, the utility confirmations, more or less the utility's ability to serve, was not submitted with any of those. We have received all those notifications from utility companies, and each utility company has pointed out that they are able to serve this. There is a Alliant Energy natural gas line that is out in the area, so staff standpoint would be we're assuming that there won't be the individual LP tanks on each lot, that they'll probably bring the gas into the subdivision, but again, that's something the applicant and the developer will have to decide. There was some concern last month. We did point out that we were unsure exactly where the current Xenia water line was along 505th and 190th. We've been able to find one particular document that shows that it might be on this property. However, with the numbers that I showed you, that line probably isn't going to come in contact or interfere with any of the building envelopes that are on those sites along 190th. That's assuming that everything Xenia did was probably in accordance with the easement that they have taken place on the property. Nobody knows, I guess, if that's happened, but like I said, as of right now, our assumption would be that that water line, if it is on this property, that it's going to be within the required setbacks for each lot at a minimum. And lastly, the fire chief for Gilbert and Franklin Township, who is the responding agency for this property, has noted that they are able to serve this. It is their responsibility to serve this. They did recommend a few things that the applicant could possibly do with the houses out there because this being a rural fire department, they did note that it could take up to 15 minutes for fire response to get from Gilbert to this site. The open space requirement, as you recall, that did come up. Surrey County requires 15% of the subdivision site to be dedicated as open space. There was some back and forth, I guess, on if that should be done on a net acreage basis or a gross acreage basis. We don't define which one it should be in our ordinance. And I believe there was some discussion, and I think staff feeling is that if we were going to put that into our ordinance, which we probably should be doing, that more than likely we would do it off net acreage because that seems to make the most sense. And based off the numbers that we did provide with this, they do meet that net acreage requirement. It was a little bit short on the growth. As far as stormwater management, we did note last month, I think, the overall this site, as far as grading, if the subdivision does get approved, the grading of this site really isn't going to be disturbed too much except for putting in all the public roads and right-of-ways that are going to be in there. For the most part, the drainage is going to take place, if you look on, I'll show you one of the attachments that we had from them. Excuse me, just take a little bit to load on this laptop. But if you follow kind of the green lines on the screen here above, you'll kind of see exactly those drainage patterns that are taking place on the property and that will take place with this development. So for the most part, you're seeing the drainage on these lots that will take place into the road ditches that will be put in for the most part, eventually draining into this outlot area right here. And through this area, there are some other drainage ways. For example, in this back portion right here, that will go into this area, which I believe is going to be used as a wetland restoration project. Uh, Oh, and regarding the existing tile system, I believe the applicant here on this map, the kind of maroon lines show where they believe, I know those are the breaks. Let me get up here. This one right here showing where the known tiles and the assumed tiles are going to be. Those blue lines showing where that is. You can see right here that kind of follows these lots right here for the most part. This one in the middle of the division here is in this outlot area. And there is another one to the south there too. But according from what we've gathered from the applicant, they're not 100% sure where those tile lines are right now, and I believe they're going to do some further investigative work to figure out exactly where those are. However, the proposed covenants, and they did include this in their analysis, they are going to mitigate any damage that's done to tiles during construction, and I believe they have a requirement in there that says that if any tile line is disrupted, that it needs to be replaced, it needs to be sized up one tile size. So that should help with any disruption that takes place on those tile lines. The non-compliant lots, you remember the flag lot issue that we had. Flag lot issue we had on lots 8 and 9 here. As you can see, this is the new preliminary plat that they have submitted. That particular concern has been mitigated. And there was a concern with the minimum acreage on, it's now lot 14, but I believe it was lot 44. But again, that's also been taken care of as well with this new submittal. We did note with the proposed covenant review and the memo I gave you at that time, we had not reviewed and updated draft of the covenants, but since then we have, we did receive a copy, I believe, last Friday, and I did review those this morning. And again, the covenants, there's no concerns with it. They have added the covenant for the tile maintenance. And there is also a covenant that covers the maintenance of septic systems. In talking with Environmental Health on that one, they're going to look into that further. They may want some additional information or additional verbiage put into that covenant, but right now I think it does cover what we're looking for. Just a few other changes that have taken place. We did note that the street names have changed. I have checked those against our database that we have of current street names, and there's no concerns there. The lay of the outlots has not changed, but we have divided those outlots up a little bit, and that's for various reasons that the applicant needs to just have a few areas in those outlots dedicated to different parties. This plan does show an overall phasing plan. If I zoom out here a little bit, you can kind of see the kind of purplish area will be phase one, so mainly here in this area right here, and including planning that windbreak up there to the north that they talked about. Phase two would be this light blue area, and then phase three would be everything kind of on the north half of the subdivision. And lastly, we had mentioned last month that the AR zoning was still pending. That has been finally approved by the Board of Supervisors. I believe that was published last Thursday, and it is now official, so the property is now considered to be zoned AR, agricultural residential. So I believe that covers, from our standpoint, and hopefully this kind of gives you a little bit more information that you were looking for. But I've got everything here in front of me. We've got all the documents that they submitted, so if there's any individual questions on anything, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
I have questions for Charlie.
Can you point to the proposed restored wetland for me?
That's this outlot B. Hold on. Once it pulls up, it's this area right down in here. This outlot B, so from this point to the south there.
North.
Yeah, I have a question about the... It looks like And I think it says in here, when I read through it, that outlot D is intended as a potential road extension of the road to develop mm-hmm. that lot that's between the two developments.
Yep. Do you have any other questions? I guess I can go ahead. I think I might forget that.
I just kind of wanted to
yep.
discuss that.
You can kind of see this lot right here, this long, narrow lot. The individual landowner,
I think. I can't see your cursor when you're saying this.
I can just use this guy. I'm sorry.
This lot right here,
right. For the most part, has two kind of open areas that the contours would allow to be developed. This area right here and this area right here. The lot currently is accessed right here, but I believe this area was farmed as part of all this area right in here. I know, and I think the applicant can probably speak to this a little bit better than me, but they've had some discussions with this individual about possibly bringing her into the subdivision, and I'm not sure where those talks went, but I don't think that individual is ready to do that right now. From our standpoint, if we don't allow some access to be made to this parcel, we are pretty much landlocking that parcel from any development in the future if the individual wants to ever develop it. And I think the applicant recognized that, just as we recognize that. So they provided this outlot right here, first and foremost right now for field access to this area, for anybody that wants to farm that. But then secondly, if this area ever wants to be developed, to put that road in here. We had some concerns about the size of that, and that outlot actually I think was increased by 5 feet in width just to meet all the setback requirements that we have, plus all the road width requirements. So that's all satisfied. And then again, this spot right here, you can kind of see how the cul-de-sac butts up to it in case it's ever to be developed.
So the, I guess my question is that that just doesn't appear to be the, I mean, is the idea that that outlot B just basically becomes a driveway to back to that, or does it intend to be kind of a road that matches? Because
you're talking in the interim.
So it looks like there's enough space to match, you know, this road to continue through and still meet all the back sets and space requirements.
Yeah, no, you're talking all the setbacks and everything.
Yeah,
yeah, that was, again, that was some of our concern. I believe initially it was 100 feet. So you've got, I'm trying to think right off the top of my head, I think it's a 50-foot right-of-way requirement that the county has out here. And then these lots would all have to be side setbacks, and those side setbacks are 37.5 feet. So if you do the math, that was what they needed. It was originally 100 feet. We did all the math and realized that they needed 105 feet, so they did increase that by 5 feet in width. But it does meet what we have right now as far as requirements. If they were to add that tomorrow, there would be enough width there to make it work.
But then the others on the other street, so Windrose Lane there, the one that runs up to Lot D, that is wider than what the requirements are, because and maybe it's just a perspective, but it doesn't look like if you look at like the back set for Lot 10 and Lot 12 from the street, and then you look at what the side lot would be for Lot 7 and Lot 8, it doesn't match. And I'm just curious. I'm new here. I want to understand.
Yep. So on Windrose Lane, those lots all take frontage off Windrose, so it's a 50-foot front setback on those. Now, again, if you put that extension in there, Lot 8 and Lot 7, they're taking frontage off, which would be Harvest Road, but it would be kind of, they'd be two corner lots there, so they need to have that side corner setback instead of the front setback, which is about 12.5 feet less than the front setback.
I'm looking at Lot 10 and Lot 12, and they're set back differently than those would be.
You're talking in Lot 12 right here?
Yeah.
It looks, lot 12 has that 50-foot front setback and that 37.5-foot side, so that's exactly what these two would be required to have as well.
All right. So if 10 and 12, if that's a side setback,
Lot 10 has a 50-foot front setback because it's taking access off Harvest Lane and a 37.5 side here. So it's a little bit different than 12. Lot 10's taking access off of this road right here. Lot 12's taking access off Harvest Road. At least how they have it outlined here on the flat.
So what is the distance then between 7 and 8?
105 feet, I believe.
Yeah.
And 105 would be, again, the two... I'm trying to do the math in my head real quick. Is it 50-foot right-of-ways? 50-foot, okay. So the 50-foot right-of-way, and then the two side corner setbacks would be 37.5 feet and 37.5 feet, which is 75 feet altogether. So you have the 75 plus the 50, which is 125. However, right now, Lot 8 and Lot 7 are showing 10-foot side setbacks, so then you subtract the two 10-foot side setbacks off to get the 105. If I haven't completely lost you in the math.
No, you didn't lose me.
So, if the side setback requirement is 37.5 feet, it's a side corner, so on the corner lot, it's 37.5.
Right.
But if there's no corner lot, if it's just a regular lot, it's 10 feet. So, but Outlot D right now, it's not considered a road. It's just, it's going to be planted as, I believe, green space. And if you look on their, the summary that they gave Outlot D, it says it will have the same treatment as Outlot A, except there will be a path for the adjacent property owner to access their field. It's not going to be considered a road for all inclusive, for what we consider and won't be considered a road. It might be a driveway access that goes back there, but we're not considering that to be a public right-of-way right now. At some point, that may change.
The net is there needs to be 125 feet between the edge of 8 and the edge of 7, and you're saying that exists.
Yeah, because you have the 105 feet plus the two 10-foot setbacks right now.
So then I have a related question. If that becomes a road because there's a house that's going to be built there, does that drop us below the 15% of...
It depends on, and that's something that we would individually review when it comes in, but my assumption, which I'm pretty sure is right, is that you're going to have an increase in open space because all these planted areas right here, if you look at the elevation on them, this area right here and then this area back in here is not going to be able to be developed, so you're almost adding more to it. And I haven't run the numbers, I haven't looked at it, but my assumption would be if this was to be even included right now in the division, that we wouldn't even be having this 15%, because I think that would almost bring it up to both net and growth requirements. But again, if and when this is ever subdivided, that's something that we'll look at on an individual basis for this particular one.
I have a question about the verbiage about proposed mitigation strategies if the existing tile were to be damaged. And we write in here that their proposal to add them to the covenant. The staff will require a final review of the covenants before approval. Does that mean that when you review those covenants that that will be a requisite of your review? Or, I mean, we have a whole lot of, you know, proposed, and will that be, do we need to put that into our motion that would be required part?
Sure. And I think what I was trying to say is before the final plat comes through, we want to see that mentioned in the covenants. Now, again, I have now reviewed the updated version of the covenant since I wrote that memo, and they are included in there.
Oh, okay.
So, and I won't read it. Fully, but it says that the drain tiles that need to be rerouted will be upsized to the next pipe size, but to a minimum of 2 inches in diameter. Drainage tiles that are relocated around basement shall be a minimum of 20 feet from the exterior of the residence, garage, or other approved structure. And that's just in part. But they have added that covenant in there.
Also, any questions?
I have just one question.
Sure.
point to where is the tillable land that we're giving, there's access?
Oh, the one that we were talking, this area right here. It's just
that's it?
Yeah. I want to say all together, probably about 5 acres.
Okay. And to the right of that is, along that street, our current homes?
Yep. This is a Hickory Hill subdivision. Kind of
one that came to us before, right?
I'm not sure if you were on the commission yet, but there was a subdivision of this lot down here a couple years ago, maybe a year ago or so.
And to the top of that, did that come before us?
This area up here now. This has been developed for quite some time now. Yeah. You might be thinking of Bella Woods, which is probably down the road about a mile.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. And to the north of that, what do we have?
North of this? Or over here?
Yeah.
This is all Manly Farm Field. If you've ever been out in this area, you go around the turn here on 505th down to 190th, and you go down a hill, and you're pretty much all in the floodplain for Squaw Creek down there.
And it's developed, or is that open space right to the left of that tillable?
Right here?
Where do you go?
This area? It's just a single family residence. Yep.
Okay. We're done with questions for staff, our applicant. Mr. Friedrich, would you like to address us?
Thank you, Commission. My name is Kurt Friedrich, 3414 Honeysuckle Road in Ames. As you can hear, I have a bit of a cold, so I'll keep my comments brief, and I thought you may want to hear also from my engineer, Scott Renault Fox, as he has helped greatly in the preparing of the documents that you see before you here tonight. But we've gone through our preliminary plat, and we've made the additional clarifications and modifications that were requested at the previous meeting, and have also provided the narrative. Hopefully you've seen and able to review the narrative related to septic, tile systems, stormwater management, and natural areas plantings, and preliminary plan for that. With that, I really don't have much to add other than I hope that you'll approve our preliminary plat and allow us to move forward. Mrs. Berg's name was alluded to. We had reached out to Lois Berg. Lois is the owner of the 10 acres adjacent to our property just to the east, and we just had done that essentially to be neighborly, to find out what her plans were, to share with her our plans for the development next door. And we did inquire as to whether or not she might be interested in incorporating this, her property into ours, and there was no decision made, and to my knowledge, there's no interest in that happening. So that's where that sits at this moment. But as Charlie had stated, we are providing the necessary land and easements in the outlots in order to achieve a connection if it's desired at some point in the future. So, unless there are any questions for me specifically, I'll turn it over to Scott.
I have a quick question. I'm looking at this, and if you're not sure of what's going to happen with that land in there, you talked to the current owner. I see nice offsets and buffers and outlands and things all around, except for on those two top lots. They go, looks like, right up to the property line. Is there, if somebody else does come in and develop that, I mean, what is the, I guess, why is there not the same type of outlot around those top two lots that surrounds pretty much everything else?
Can you point to that, Charlie? When, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to strip all the way.
I think, Mr. Smith, I think the best answer I can give you right now is that's based on the infrastructure plan that we have for the project, which takes that cul-de-sac nearly to the property line. It just wouldn't, I don't know that it would make good planning sense to create a barrier that were landscaped and such if there were the potential for that to be extended.
I guess I'm looking at it, and if you're planning it that way, then you're fairly certain that you're going to develop those.
We needed the area designed as such in order to create proper turnaround and access to those respective lots.
Okay.
Please state your name and address.
Scott Renault, Fox Engineering, 414 South 17th, Suite 107. This is Mrs. Bird's property. There's 10 acres there. She farms a piece here and a piece here. This piece is accessed actually off this corner, and so that's why we left that open. This piece, I'm not exactly sure how they access it, because it's not apparent that they're going across here, but there's like a 30 or 40 foot green area that's along here. They farm this portion right here. And so we set this up so that it has direct access. And if you looked at how this would get developed with 1 acre type lot, similar to what we have here, there's only really one developable lot here, and there's only really two or so in here by the time you get done. So we've got it set up so she can farm it in the interim period, but then in the long term it's set up that if she wants to come in.
Questions?
I have a question about the farm tile and the septic systems on those lots. Do we have a diagram that shows, I thought there was one that showed kind of the farm tile lines and the lot. Okay. I mean, it looks like it runs through the one, okay, so let's see. I'll call it the middle.
This one?
That one.
Yeah.
That looks like that runs under an outlot, right? You've kind of designated that.
It was easier to know where that one was probably located versus the other one.
Okay, so that's outlot E, just kind of is built over the
right.
Top of it.
You know, we've got two conditions on the tiles. We have dealing with the off-site neighbors, and we have dealing with on-site.
Okay.
So let me go through the off-site first, and then we'll go back to your question because I think it deals with more on-site. But we know that there's a tile coming from this direction here because there's a tile inlet right in the ditch, so we know that there's a tile that goes here, and we know that it comes out here. We do at these locations here, here, and here, we do not know if we got a tile from the neighbor. We just have to go find it and see if it's there. So if the tiles are there, we need to make sure that we have an idea from where that we are handling the neighbor's issues. Then when it comes to working within the subdivision itself, we have to reroute those around certain features.
Okay. That was my question, is there a plan for, and how do you deal with that?
Well, once we find them here, we can scope them and kind of figure out where they're located a little bit better, but until we figure out whether they're there or not, we're just kind of planning around it.
But the idea is if you do locate, so if there is one that runs through, you know, kind of across all those lots, you'd relocate it between lot lines, or?
If we knew where it was and we knew it was just going to be a constant source of problem, then we would probably relocate it to a place that would cause the fewest number of issues. But, for instance, this tile here, there's an intake here and an intake here. We are not certain there's another one here. there's nothing here to indicate one other than it's depressed, and that's always a good indicator if it's a low area where water flows to look for that. So we may decide that from the development standpoint just to reroute the whole, in this case, the entire thing. In this case, this one is also in a totally with an outlot. We'll just cut it, open it up, and let it pre-drain because we're going to have a wetland situation there.
Okay.
The one on to the north is a little bit different because there's a pair of terraces out here. We know it goes up to here, but we don't know if it goes into here or not. This one will probably at some point reroute, but we haven't decided how we'll do that yet. Because if you look, this one's like in the middle of the lot, and this one's sort of in the middle of the lot. So we may go ahead and take care of that one. So some of the reroutes, it's in the covenants, but in some cases, as we know more, because the developers, both the developer and the builder of most of the houses, we want to kind of clear up some of those things as we move along. And then you have to coordinate it, of course, with the septic system, because we have to maintain our distance. Any other questions? I thought Charlie did a good job of explaining what we were trying to do.
I'm a little surprised that you don't know whether or not there's tiles there or not currently.
Well, we asked the landowner if they had any tile maps, and they didn't have any, so we're never quite certain. The soils that are out there are indicative that it's possible the tiles weren't needed. We do have some outlets in a couple locations, but again, they correspond to what we know is to be there. And once we get on up, we can't find anything. We've looked for all the tiles in this location, in this location, in this location on both sides of the road, trying to figure out this tile there. It's not uncommon. And even if, there could even be little tile spurs going up into these hills that we don't know about. So we just have to have a plan to deal with them.
Can you remind me, what is the projected time frame for development of this subdivision?
I'll go back to the paving part. It kind of depends a little bit on lot sales and the velocity of lot sales. But this year, this portion here, hopefully it sells out relatively quickly. Probably come back and do this second and then this third. But in the realm of how we do the construction, it may be done different than that. We may go ahead and construct. We are planning on constructing all the green spaces right away. And we haven't decided yet, but we're likely to grade everything. The only thing we won't do is pave and put in some of the utilities.
And so we're talking 2014, 15, 16?
So it's 2014, 2015, 2016. If it sells that quick, I'm certain somebody will be happy. It may, it depends on the housing market. If the housing market slows down, it might take a little bit longer. Friedrich's been in town 85 years. 85 years, so they'll be around for the duration.
The reason I asked the question was that does coordinate with the tiling question, and so I'm concerned.
I mean, we know the tiles are there. We just have to have a plan to take care of them. Which is.
Are you satisfied, Charles, that that's covered?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not my area of expertise, so I would lean on a engineer over me, but I think that, if you go back to some of the wind turbine projects that we've had, that's always been a concern is, you're putting those things in the old farm field, what are we going to do with tile? And that's always been the thing, is just to make sure that we mitigate for them and have a plan to mitigate for them, and I think they're covering that in the covenants, yes. Problem with the covenants is we can't enforce them, so, but again, they're there, and all indications are that they'll take care of it, so. Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that wish to address this particular item? If so, please come to the podium and state your name and address.
Hello, my name is Dean Gerard, 4957 West 190th Street. I believe you guys are pretty much all familiar with me by now. This is my third or fourth meeting with Story County. So first, I would like to say that I know the decisions that you've made up until this point haven't been easy, and I want to commend you for tabling this project last month when it didn't seem like things were all quite laid out and we had all the definitive answers and layouts that should be required for moving with a project of this size. So I thank you for that. My primary concern this entire time has been different than some of my neighbors. I know that I heard somebody speak about light pollution from Hickory Hills, and I had a neighbor who most of this grading drains into the north side and the south side of his property, and so he was quite concerned with the development as far as drainage. But I think my concern is primarily directed to the drainage of this this project as well. And as you can see from the contour, that I would say, I don't have all the details, but I would say probably roughly 70% of this property does drain through two areas, and that would be roughly along, I got it, roughly along, I guess mine's dead. Thank you. Most of it's going to drain out through this natural area here with this main tile. And a lot of it, anything here, all of it flows primarily up to this, and it flows down to this, and it flows out this way. So these two areas get a lot of flow as it is right now. And with any houses that you're digging out a basement and you're cutting tile, or you're discovering tile, and it's bound to be found. I've seen several tile operations in this field over the years, so I know it's there, and they've located the majority ones, but when it does get cut or have to be worked around, their proposals here is that they are going to be mandatory to upgrade to a larger tile, so you're only going to be, again, contributing to a quicker and bigger drainage area. Of exiting the water out of here. So when I went to the Board of Supervisors meeting last month for approving rezoning this property, the first thing I did was I covered the zoning boards and the development board for the supervisors, like what their goals and initiatives were and responsibilities of the team and for the county. And while they thanked me for reminding them, they also thanked me that they did not need to be reminded of what their duties were as members of the county officials. And I'm straying a little bit from the point, but I think that that is exactly what every official that is involved in developing the county should be reviewed and concerned with anytime a project comes up to them, whether it's a mass development or if it's somebody that's just applying to have an additional lane put in their backyard or whatever the case may be, that there are definitely things that were put in place to protect and to prevent issues down the road as this county gets bigger. And it's just, it's a given that we have to expand. There's more people, there's more revenue, there's more schools, there's more houses, there's more whatever. I'm not here to stop development. I'm just here to try and make sure that it gets developed properly. And so far, I think that the project has been structured and harnessed a little bit so that those things are being put in place. However, one of my biggest concerns is that they're not doing any major grading because the contour of land already slopes to two or three different areas. But as we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years, the city of Ames has had two or three what they call 50-year floods, and one was called the 500-year flood, I think. And I believe in the 90s, which was preceded my time in this county, but they had what was called a 500-year flood. And so with a project like this, I'm not being an expert on drainage, and I know they've, they've stated here, that an acre of farmland drains more by a small amount than an acre of residential, based on that the residential has 20% of structure and the driveway and that sort of thing. But these are just rough numbers, and really, I can't believe that those numbers are not going to be. Sorry, I'm having a hard time with my words here. That the residential housing with a garage and a big driveway and all the spouts from their houses and your short field or short lawns and fertilized lawns, and there's going to be more drains, and of course they have to put in bigger tiles once they start digging some of these foundations in, just to give them. So there's going to be more runoff. So I'm concerned about what the next 20 years in Ames is going to be. The problems that we have now, we can't really do anything to make them less of a problem as far as Squaw Creek watershed, which is the main issue with the city of Ames. I'm sure there's a lot of people that work at Iowa State University that wish that they would have done something 25 years ago or when the flood in the 90s happened. But what we can do is that we can make changes and take the time and initiative and spend the extra money and do things properly that are developing that do drain into this watershed to prevent the losses from being even more extensive in the future. And so my one question that I would like to propose is, why isn't it necessary that a development of this size has some sort of catch pond or some sort of, I don't know, drainage to curb the amount of water that's going to run off into this watershed area? The second thing that concerns me pretty much is that, it's been stated that they're not going to be doing any, they're going to leave the natural areas, which I think is great because there's very little natural area on this property. But again, some of the stuff and things that I hear in the basic proposals from when Charlie is covering some of the stuff is that, the intentions are this, and, we don't have this, documented, but we suspect there's not going to be issues. And when they do their soil tests for the septic, we can't do it right now, but we expect it to be done and expect it to come out just fine. Some of these things still aren't, they're still not documented detailed enough, in my opinion, and I want to make sure that we can take the initiative to do everything that we can to prevent issues down the line. If the site evaluation for poor septic is, is negative or poor, whatever, it comes back in an ungiving way, I don't know what that means. I would like to know what happens next. Is that, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't seem clear. I guess I should have taken the time to have a little bit more detail on this, but I've been preoccupied with some other travel trips for work. But one of the things on here that says, and I'm covering a lot of range here, and so I'm sure there'll be a couple answers. And so I'd just like to continue for some of these things here. On the last page of this proposal, it says outlaw E, the existing vegetation will remain. Some trash trees and invasive species will be removed from the area. But so to say, the vegetation is going to stay, but then say some trash trees. Well, who designates what a trash tree is? I mean, all trees that are in an area where there's basically 68 acres and there's 1.5 or 2 acres of trees in the main drainage area, I don't think any of those acres, any of those trees should be touched at all. I think there just needs to be very detailed layouts. And maybe that comes in phase two or phase three. I don't know how these projects work. This is all kind of new to me. And honestly, I wish that I had time and resources to put a lot more studying and involvement into the project. But my property isn't necessarily affected directly by water. Like if the water runoff on the north side of the property here, this is my house right here in the corner. If that water runs off and it washes out this culvert or this road or anything, I have another access out. And so I've kind of, I don't have to be concerned about an issue. I've seen the bridge be closed and that road be underwater three times in the last 5 years that I've lived there, and it never affects me. I can just drive out the other way. So I'm not here to be concerned about my personal property. I'm just here as far as the bigger picture of Story County and the city of Ames and what we can do as responsible stewards and developers and that sort of thing to prevent more damage and just make sure that everything is detailed and documented and that the questions aren't just broadly listed here of saying, well, this is what we intend to happen and this is what the covenant says, but we can't hold the covenant to, I'm not sure what Charlie's words were 10 minutes ago, but it was something about this isn't a covenant, but we can't hold them to what that says and that sort of thing. That's the first time I've ever heard that. I thought the covenant is, this is what it says, this is what's documented, this is what's being approved, well, this is what's going to happen, but maybe that's not the case. I don't know enough about the process, but, so I just want to express some of my concerns, primarily about just water conservation and what little natural land is there. I think it should be completely untouched. And then also, with all the land sloping to one area, why aren't we substituting one of these lots and putting in some sort of catch plan as far as the water? And then if we are going to be doing, some of these wetlands and prairie grasses and stuff, at what point do we get a listing of exactly what types of plants and what the project is going to be? Because as soon as you start developing, you are affecting the drainage. And if it's a three-year or five-year plan, and the gradient all gets done this first year, but they're only going to build houses in this one part for the first year, well, all that water is still, it's got to go someplace those next 2 years when there's no grass on it, there's nothing regulating that sort of thing. So why isn't wildlife management and harnessing the drainage and that sort of thing a top priority and put in place before or even during the first phase when they are grading that sort of stuff? I don't think I really have anything detailed further other than at the very end it just says tree planting will occur the first year and will continue through the lot of the development, but then in parentheses it says not all trees will be planted the first year. So this is the type of wording that I would like a little bit more clarity on, is that you say one thing, tree planting will occur the first year, but then in parentheses, not all trees will be planted the first year. There have been some great changes since the last meeting, but there's still a lot of stuff that's just, for me personally, as a resident and a concerned person for the county and the future, I just want things documented, and I want to see, once it's in paper, then it's going to take another meeting to have that paper changed to abide, to get around that, because things are written, laws are put in place for a reason, and it's to protect and to be responsible and to make sure that everybody's getting what they need. So I guess that's all I have for now, but thank you for your time, and you could answer a few of those questions about planting and vegetation and what part of the process that stuff is documented, and then why we can't do different things for water collection unless it's just a matter of, well, the ground grades this way, so it's just easier to let the water run this way. But thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your comments.
Bernard, you want to continue to take questions? A public comment?
What accountability does the county have toward the developers? In regard to the developers, the covenants, you stated that there's no accountability?
No, covenants are kind of an agreement, a set of regulations that are put in place by the developer that goes on to the landowners. The county cannot enforce the covenants. So anything that's written in the covenant, if there ever is a disagreement in the covenant, it's strictly a civil matter. The county does not go in and ever enforce covenants. We enforce our regulations. Covenants sometimes are more or less they're above and beyond what our regulations say. We won't enforce that. That's something that's always handled in a civil manner.
Limited accountability.
There's accountability that's going to be there, but it's just the county's not a party to that accountability. So if there is ever suit brought, it's going to be more or less the neighbor or a homeowners association bringing suit onto an individual landowner. The county won't be a party to it.
Okay.
just how it's always been, and trust me, it's something I don't think we'd ever want to get into, because there's way too many covenants out there, and they're all different, so. The west side and north side? No, the only thing that's paved is Cameron School Road, which was on the south. We've had very preliminary discussion about paving 505th, which is on the west side. That's all going to come down to a finances and if it can happen or not, and how we make that happen. And you probably know this just as well as I do, that it's not that easy.
Oh, yeah. Also, where is the Ames city limit? Would you remind me of
that? Oh, that's... And I don't think we have anything that's going to show... Well, hold on. Not significantly.
About 2 miles.
Yeah. This is right on... The 2 mile limit for the city is right on... What's that? Yeah. I can pull it up, I think, right on this thing here. This is a very slow laptop. So this development right here is this black square right in here. You can kind of see it doesn't really show it really that good, but all these, this is the city of Ames kind of in this area right here and over in this area. This is the Ames Golf and Country Club, Ada Hidden Park here, that Highway 30 and Interstate 35. So it kind of gives you a perspective. So yeah, it's mile and a half northwest of the city.
Your information. My concern is moving the Ames city limits so that it incorporates, and you know, you can shake your head and say it's not going to happen, but it happens.
And part of the reason why the city of Ames waived any review of this was largely due to the fact that the city believes that it will not annex out to this location, primarily due to the fact that it is nearly impossible, well, it is impossible to serve this area by sanitary sewer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and the Ames Urban Fringe Plan recognizes that, and it's in a land use framework designation that does not support annexation. However, political climate can change, and, you know, 30 years from now, who knows what's going to happen. But still, as of today and as of the future plans for the city, they don't ever envision growing into this area.
The other comment I would make to the accountability of protective covenants, they're very strong. And what is nice about protective covenants is that every lot owner, it doesn't take a majority to enforce a covenant. Every single lot owner has the ability to enforce the covenant if they see a covenant not being satisfied. It's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the bigger the subdivision, obviously, the more accountability you're going to have in those covenants. So, real quick, and I just made a few notes here as the last member was speaking there. The covenants we touched based on the drainage basin, that's going to be something that the developer is going to have to answer, and why they didn't go that route, I'm not sure. Septic systems, if there ever is boring that are done that shows that the soils in particular are not suitable for septic. Again, I'm not an expert in this matter, but we've always been told by the health department that nothing's impossible as far as septic system. It's just a matter of money. So if the soils are that bad, it's just going to be that much more of an expensive system you're going to have to put on there. But again, based off what we've been able to gather right now, it doesn't appear that's probably going to be an issue. But again, it can be taken care of. Yeah, I think that was the only other thing that I had written down that needed to be discussed from our standpoint. So.
Questions for the applicant or their engineer?
Some questions were raised, though, about catch pond and the runoff. And I guess one of the questions I have is the farm tile that runs through the property. I think you mentioned that there were some spurs maybe that ran off into the terraces and things. I understand that if there's an inlet on one side, that you need to protect, you know, the runoff from that landowner. So that tile needs to continue through to provide that drainage. If this is not farmland, and it's going to have runoff ditches and things like that, I guess my question would be, why would we continue to have farm tile draining this development? Right? I understand the pass-through, but why would we have that tile continue to accumulate water from this? If it's not farm land any longer, why would we continue to contribute, since we are hardscaping a lot of the area, to continue to add runoff to some of those collection points in Squaw Creek and, you know, all the waterways?
Well,
I have an opportunity. You're here, so.
First of all, a little bit about my background is this is my 27th year. My degree is actually in ag engineering. I was originally trained to do farm draining and whatnot, but I do obviously other things. And this is probably my 2000th project I've done. You know, we always want to take care of the tiles, and we want the tiles to work even for the residential, because otherwise you're going to have water in your basement, and that's why everybody has a sump pump, or you should have a sump pump. And so we want to maintain the groundwater level of where they're at. The reason for the larger tile size has more to do with the fact that we're probably going to make it a longer run of tile than what exists now. And when you make it longer, you make it flatter, and in order to make it flow correctly with the same volume as the previous pipe, you want a bigger pipe. And so that's why I have a little bit larger pipe. It's not the intent to take more runoff, it's to handle what's already there. So we're really not improving that, we're just trying to keep it as the status quo from that standpoint. You know, so we don't want to turn the drainage in reverse and take the tiles out, and because we'll have wet conditions, and we don't want to necessarily, you know, promote that. We want to maintain the existing drainage system all the way through the entire project. So, did that answer your question well enough?
For the tile, sure.
Really short.
What was the question, though? There was a question about adding a catch pond.
Yeah, why we didn't do a catch pond is if you looked at the runoff from this, the runoff and rate of runoff from this subdivision, because we're doing very little draining, is less than what is there now. So it'll be slower, and it'll be less than what we have now, because everything's going to be seeded down at a certain point where it's all going to be vegetation versus the farmland situation. So even though you have 20%, you know, hard space and roofs and roads and driveways and garages and things like that, your actual amount of runoff is going to be less. And usually what happens in these subdivisions is usually it's kind of the status quo until about 80% of the lots are built, and then there'll be a kind of a dramatic notice that the runoff is reduced considerably as time goes on. And even though it's short grass, it still functions pretty much the same way. And the reason being is because we don't do a lot of grading, we maintain that soil structure, we maintain the soil in a way that will capture that runoff even when it's in short grass. So we're trying to maintain the existing topsoil. We're not hard caning things. We're trying to leave things as long as much as possible. And so for that reason, it tends to be a better sponge and not have quite as much runoff. And then, of course, we eliminate all the silt and those kind of things out of it. So that's kind of, in brief, why we didn't do it. There's no real good way or to put a pond in. Usually a pond creates as many issues as it solves. And in the case of tiles, it would block the tiles, and so that we even affect our neighbors if we build a pond. And so we left those to free drain and work as they do now. So no changes with that. Talking a little bit about a couple of these other concerns is, you know, we haven't decided on whether we're going to farm part of this or not, or develop the whole thing, but usually what we do is whenever the phase that we're in, we go ahead and seed that down and get it into ag grasses, you know, brome and alfalfa, for example, which will usually take hay off of for a while. So like to do that, controls the weeds, also holds down the erosion, and makes it look nice. People want to be able to see the lot they're going to buy, so, you know, keep it mowed, it looks like it is
where it's supposed to be. And so we typically do that all the way through. And then our plan is to do the natural areas all at once, because even though it's 13 acres, it's really in the realm of natural planning. It's not a lot of acres. And so we'd like to do that all at once and get it established, because the more it's established, the more it looks like, so that people that buy the lots know what it looks like. There's a lot of different planting plans that we use, but if you want to see stuff that we've done it for 3 weeks at Regenberg, which is off of Cedar Lane in South Ames. It's a good example of a subdivision we did with a lot of native vegetation. So we've done this on a lot of projects. We do change the recipes a little bit based on the soil types and where we're at. And so that's one of the reasons we didn't give that. We typically, I have a wetland, or I have a prairie specialist that comes in and she gives me a recipe on what I'm supposed to use. And so I haven't done that in this case. And that'll be a recipe then, of course, for the wooded wetland as well. As far as the, as far as the trees go, we do have some trash trees, we have some old trees, some of those we'll take down. Mostly I'm concerned about the multiflora rose. They covered that in the one area we wanted to get rid of. I didn't really notice a lot of what I call trash trees, but there are some trees that we like to avoid for lots of reasons that are invasive type species, and so we typically go to take care of those. And if they're not on the invasive species list, then we're not taking them out to the place. Even if they're a dead tree, it's not necessarily a problem unless it's falling into a creek or presenting some other issue. The reason we don't plant all the trees at once is because it's our intent here to try to do a little bit more of a native planting, which means we will actually plant some from seeds, which means that it'll be an ongoing thing. When we're planting oaks in particular, they come better from seeds. They work better in the prairie, and so our intent is to do more of that on this subdivision than trying to plant trees. Because our success rate with oaks in particular on subdivisions is very low, in the maybe 10 to 20% range, and that's if it's a nice wet year. It's a dry year, 100% loss, so it's our intent to try to grow these, which means that it's going to take a little bit longer, because we actually do want them to be kind of random and sparse. We don't want a lot of them. Oaks typically don't like to have really close neighbors, but we will be planting as time goes on a little bit more. In that manner. So it's a little bit different tree planting plan than I've ever done before. A lot of people like their trees right away, but one of the reasons we're not planting all the trees right away is because we want to try to build it as more of a native type ecosystem. Septic systems. Charlie was really quite right on the septic systems. I could build a septic system in this room if you want that would work and meet county's requirements. It's not really a great idea. I don't like to do that. It does take more money, and it does present some other issues. But if the site had really the only what I would call unacceptable soils for septic, if it's a wetland or has a very high water table and water's coming out of the ground, if there's something like that, that will make it unacceptable. But if it's just hard or if it's slope funny, those things we can all deal with just extra money. So really, like I said, the only thing that really usually presents us with something that we can't do is if we're next to a wetland or have a real high water table, which we don't have because they farm pretty much everything. And what they don't farm, we're not developing. So. I do apologize. I do have another meeting I have to go to. Monday night should probably be a nice meeting. So you get one last chance for questions that I need to leave.
Yep.
Yeah. One of the things that this gentleman brought up was in terms of long-range planning, not just for your development, but for the surrounding, whether it's Story County, whether it's Ames, and the effect of the development long-term. 20 years, I think, is the number that he brought up. How does that fall into the thought process of the development, per se?
Well, there's lots of different ways to look at that. First of all, from the drainage standpoint, we're having less runoff and a lower rate of runoff. It does depend on how people treat their yards. That's no different than any other place in the county or even a farmland situation. If you look at especially farmers at the rate of nitrogen application, that's even a normal homeowner is going to do considerably less. So nitrate pollution is generally less. When you eliminate the silt, you most often limit the phosphorus. And so we're probably have less nutrients,
will have less runoff and a slower rate of runoff from this subdivision. So it's all, those are all positive things for this area. Are we going to take it back to the natural ecosystem where they have a lot of potholes and poorly drained areas? No, we're not doing that. We're maintaining, as you said before, the existing tile system. And that's probably, you know, the magnitude to do that, if you followed the Ames flood study, you know, you'd be talking about changing 50% of the landscape from ag into something else, and that's probably not going to happen. On the utilities, it's our intent to build utilities in a manner that allows them to be either pulled into Ames at some point, the exception being septic. And I've done subdivisions where we have plans for basically coming back out of that, and there's ways to do that as well, that the way we're designing the subdivision set up to do.
Mm-hmm. Stu, does that answer some of your questions? Okay.
Thank you. We do appreciate your time. And
all right. Thank you.
Your explanations are helpful. They really are.
More than we need. Thank you.
If you come to the podium and give your name and address.
I represent the Hickory Hills Property Owners Association, which is to the east of this proposal. And a couple of the things that they pointed out. I'm sorry. I'm Steve. Doesn't that say name? Steve Axel, 5603 Hickory Hills Drive in Ames. These drainage systems here, I had a question that's been posed by some of our residents. I happen to live right here, and this tile system here drains into off of your property or the proposal for the property and through this lady's property, and then there's a ditch or canal that's designated down through here. And then similarly right here, the drainage comes through here. And I just wanted to ask real quick. Thank you for your last question, by the way. So I just wanted to ask how this is going to drain. Does it drain this way? Because there is a big hole in the ground here that drains down and then on down into Structure Squaw Creek. And then how do you plan to drain that? Does it stop here? Or do you go through her property and into this canal? Because there's a lot of erosion back in here already. I know you stated that it was left, but I just wondered how that works. It's probably
not too long of an answer. In the lower area, there is a culvert that goes under the road, so that some of that existing flow will be maintained. The blue areas are where water flows on the surface, and then the little brown lines are the ridge areas. On Mrs. Bird's property is, there's three locations where the tiles come out. On the north, the middle, we don't really plan to do anything with those. They come out in a good location. On the south one that he pointed to, that area would require maybe a little bit of a fix of her outlet, which we're obviously going to do if she'll let us. If she doesn't, then we'll have to use what's there. As far as surface runoff and whatnot goes, you know, here's the deal is, I've lived here for about as long as I said I worked here, and what we're seeing is in the last 20 years in particular, the runoff due to the really heavy rainfall events has been really high in 10 of the last 20 years. And when we're looking at long-term degradation of streams, it's fairly uniform across the board that almost all the streams that I look at and visit are increasing in size by about 50% just because it's been wet the last 10 out of the last 20 years, and very wet when it's been wet. So there's always an issue of any stream channel being needing to be maintained no matter where you're at, whether you're on the Squaw Creek or the Skunk River or any smaller ones. It's all the same. So. And we'll gladly, you know, those kind of issues, if you come out, you know, you buy me lunch free, I'll come out and take a look and give you some advice on how to take care of some of those things. Because in some cases, trees are kind of the issue because the trees are not particularly good at stream bank stabilization. They sometimes make it worse. So sometimes it's putting some grasses in and doing some other things that you can do. But all of it fairly economical, and you can do it by hand. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Time. We have, there's no further discussion. We're ready to for a motion.
I will move that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommend approval of the major subdivision preliminary plat as put forth in case SUB 12-13 to the Story County Board of Supervisors and direct staff to schedule review by the Board of Supervisors on February 11, 2014.
Do I hear a second?
I second it.
Is there any further discussion?
I would love to see a couple of the conditions applied. I want to vote to recommend. I just think that it is worth mentioning in our motion that the recommendations by the health department be applied in a wastewater evaluation before final plat of approval, or if weather necessitates that those recommendations be applied in the wastewater evaluation in the development agreement. And I would also, I don't know if this is a condition, but your memo did note that we need to address the open space issue, pass something along to the Board of Supervisors. So I would also add that we note that we believe that the open space requirement is adequate based on the net acreage of the subdivision when calculated on the net acreage of the subdivision. Sorry that's not concise, but it just seems to me that tacking those two on are pretty small, and it just covers our bases a little bit.
Charlie, with the first issue, with the ground being so frozen and knowing that it might be some time before you can absolutely condone that, how far is that going to put them back in their project?
You're talking about the first condition? Well, in the way that Mr. Steele worded it, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were saying that the soil evaluation be done before the final plat or with the development agreement.
Weather permitting, of course, ideal before the final plat, but I understand that.
And the developer might be able to speak to this. I'm not sure what the timing is on the final plat or what their plans are, but typically with the final plat, we either tie that or there's a development agreement that comes along with the final plat that talks about how roads are going to be put in, to what standards the roads are going to be put in, and all that stuff as far as infrastructure goes. Either that, or they put all that stuff in, take care of all that. What we have done in the past here is then before the final plat goes forward to the Board of Supervisors, we'll have our staff go out there and just kind of walk through and make sure all that stuff's been done, and then give the Board of Supervisors our word that, you know, we went out there, looked at it, that stuff's all been done. So it kind of covers us, I guess, in both scenarios that way. So again, you either do it with the development agreement or you wait until all that stuff's put in and then the final plat comes. Does that make sense? Okay.
For the second condition.
That's a correct summary of what I said.
A bit more wordier.
I think either or, ideally by final plat to middle.
Yeah.
That's not feasible. Then the development agreement is fine.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we address that, because even though we could do a septic system that worked right here in this room, cost is an issue, and at least by making sure this evaluation is done, then there's a record in the records regarding the approval of the subdivision plat. I mean, the reason we do it now, right, is because an astute potential lot buyer could come and look at the records and say, yeah, I can do a septic system there, but it's going to cost me 150% more.
Yeah, that
and just be an educated home buyer.
That, and I think we try to do it a little bit beforehand too, so that can reflect on the lot layout in a situation where the soils might be a little bit different. For example, we require that site evaluation and then hope that the subdivision gets planned around that site evaluation a little bit more. So, and then, Ms. Miller, the second one about the open space, and you weren't here last month, were you? What happens here is, you know the difference in the net and the gross acreage. Okay.
So the way we've always calculated open space in the past is we take the acres of open space and divide it by the gross acreage on the site. Well, the applicant, in doing it, they divided it by the net acreage on the site. Well, we went back and double-checked, and we've never defined exactly which way you use. However, we're indifferent, I guess, on what method you use. But, again, our ordinance doesn't touch on that. So what the memo was trying to say, or what the memo, what I tried to say in the memo was that I think it's appropriate for the commission to forward a recommendation on which one to use, either gross or net, onto the Board of Supervisors. So, again, if the issue does come up at the Board of Supervisors meeting, we can at least tie it back and say the commission was recommending based off using that. Yeah.
The record, those two conditions?
Sure, let me try again. And, again, we haven't active motion on the table. So, but my suggestion would be that we add the conditions that the wastewater evaluation be the wastewater evaluation, including the points outlined by the health department, be completed before final plat submittal, if weather allows, or postponed until weather does allow and outlined in the development agreement. The second thing, Charlie, I don't know what the proper procedure is because it's not really a conditioned.
Yeah, not really conditioned, but and we can, you know, based off, I think, the discussion that's taken place right now and it is on the record, we can simply say the discussion took place, they decided to recommend using the net, or they decided to approve based off using the net.
I think it's our job to make the recommendation on that when the regulations are not clear, and my personal opinion is that calculating it off the net is appropriate, and they met the threshold. If that's done,
it wouldn't necessarily be a condition, just work on in the motion. We can cover that from a staff standpoint pretty easily.
Actually, I was. Oh, you just take it from the recording. Okay.
I might call your attention to the memo where the health department actually laid out points that they wanted addressed in the
I have those I can read.
In the wastewater evaluation. I would just suggest that the wastewater evaluation, including those points, be taken care of before final plat submittal, if weather allows, or included in the development agreement, if otherwise.
We have a revised motion, so I would ask for so you are asking for alternative number two.
That's correct.
Is there a second to the revised motion? I can verbally ask if you remove
it. I remove my motion from the table.
I move that we recommend approval with the condition as outlined.
I'll second that.
All right. The motion has been to have alternative number two as stated, with the wastewater evaluation completed prior to final plat, and we'll have roll call vote.
Donaldson? Cowser?
Aye.
Steele? Went?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Aries, thank you for your time. I know it was a lot of it. Good luck with your project.
That wasn't actually a condition of our recommendation, but
unconditioned.
I think
it's
Charlie,
in the record that that's how it will be considered.
Yeah, the proposal as the proposal as it sits is proposed using open space calculated on net developed.
Kind of a point of service.
For this project, it was submitted using open space based on net. They're not counting open space for the easements or the access and things for roads and things like that, because that's not land that they're developing. So they're basing the open space based on the land that they're going to develop, the net land. And so our recommendation is that we approve this plan, but note that this plan, the open space, meets the requirement based on a calculation against net land, not gross. And because that's not clear in the code, or in the ordinances, it's not clear, doesn't say calculated against gross or calculated against net, our feeling is that calculating against net makes sense.
Because it's not one of the conditions. However, it was noted and will be brought to the Board of Supervisors that was discussed and recommended. Specifically. No.
Not that we might get there, but
you don't need a separate motion for that. You feel comfortable that you're just communicating a consensus of the commission that's
based off the net and gross you're talking?
Yeah,
it's just an interpretation, I believe, from the commission, and that's how you're interpreting that certain that particular regulation, and that's, yeah, we can. However, I think we've also, from a staff standpoint, recognized that this is an issue, and it probably does need to be resolved sometime soon. So.
Something that you may address separately.
Probably.
Yeah.
We'll see when that happens. So, depending on how that happens. Leanne sitting back there, she can probably speak to that a little bit better. So.
Aware of our concerns.
All right, we're going to move forward onto item number 8, new business. Hello, Leanne. I handed out before the meeting began a nice colored sheet table that says coordinated long range plan and agreement. I just want to quickly update the board, the commission. This is a project that's on our work program. It's an 18 month plus long project. It is to kind of, I don't want to take it as simple as saying update the county development plan, but that is a component of it. Updating county development plan, taking it beyond that level, and developing a comprehensive plan for Story County. First time we've done it in Story County. We are not going to go at it alone. Hopefully the board will agree with staff and fund a portion of the project by allowing us to use consultants. And that's what the schedule is. This is on the board's agenda for tomorrow to approve the schedule and the funding mechanisms. We have several components. I'm just bringing it to you for information's sake right now. Next month, we'll be talking about project team. Who's on the project team? A team of 10, 15 people that will help staff and consultants as we go through this kind of lengthy process over the next 18 to 20 months. So I'd be thinking about if you would be interested in serving on that. It'd be in addition to this, but then you ultimately as a commission will be being involved in this process as well. Any updates that are done to the plan go through you and then to the board supervisors. But it's a new adventure for us. I just wanted you to have this as a background for our discussion next month, too. And I'll have more details following tomorrow's meeting if indeed they do agree to letting us do an RFP to bring consultant on board and assist staff with this. Any questions?
The numbers that you have in terms of budget, okay? If I add those up, that's $61K,
mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, just one clarification there.
item number 10.
I think we get a question first.
What, were there any questions on this? What?
Where does the... Okay, we've got the consultant in the first section. Where does the consultant involved in any of the other steps, if at all? Did I make myself not clear?
No.
Hmm?
Okay, again?
The first one, that's February of 2014, was that develop and release RFP consultant selection.
Look right. Over the right-hand side where it says consultant budget.
Yes.
Every time you see a figure there, a consultant will be involved.
Okay.
They'll be throughout the process.
All right, that's what I wanted to know.
Exception of implementation strategies, and next November, December, when we're budgeting for fiscal year 16, we'll be looking at it. Are we going to need a consultant help with implementation or not?
Okay. Thank you.
Now we can move on to item 10.
The only thing is Rolling Hills conditional use permit, and that goes to the Board of Adjustment Wednesday. The only item follow-up. I think everything else is going on. I mean, Cameron Estates, Mary Nell, has been approved through all three readings of the board. Cameron Farms rezoning, they switched names, rezoning to subdivision midway through. It's been pretty quiet.
Project, and I'm impressed that they got as much done in this month as they did. So, our future meeting, item number 11, it's scheduled for March 3rd. We don't have anything as of yet, but the deadlines have been moved back, so it's very possible in the next week, week and a half, that something may come in. Staff comments? Comments from the commissioners?
Quick, and correct me if this isn't appropriate, but I'd just like to comment on restrictive covenants. You know, I just think that those have to be viewed as icing on the cake, because while any one lot owner could sue any other lot owner over enforcement of the covenants, they can be modified at any time by a majority of the lot owners, and the developer is the majority owner of all the lots until 51% of them are sold. So until that time, what we're shown, I shouldn't say he, because I'm talking in general, by any developer in the covenant is something that could be changed the day after the plat is approved theoretically. So I don't know. I don't mean to lecture, it's a soapbox of mine a little bit, but it's just, I think we ought to view it all as...
It's potentially arbitrary.
Yeah.
They can say whatever they want, and do whatever they want after it's approved.
And I know it's a real challenge in a regulatory framework to write a way to a mechanism for implementing all these little things that they say they're going to take care of in the covenants, but it's just something I think we probably need to be aware of.
And that's really the beauty of having that development agreement.
Yeah.
That we can craft. It really is a, don't want to say a negotiating tool, but in some aspects it is, to ensure that there's a little give and take the county can do, but we can negotiate for some things that are maybe above and beyond what the regulations would allow in certain circumstances.
And we saw an issue with covenants backfire on Bella Woods subdivision with that stub road that was put on just the west, if you recall that one at all.
Mm-hmm.
Bella Woods, remember they were putting that road in, and we couldn't connect the two roads because the previous development only had word of it in the covenants, and the covenants had expired roughly 3 months before that new division came through. So yeah, it was a mess. Still a covenant, so...
A motion to adjourn.
What about this? What's this about?
I did a county development plan 101 and referenced that as part of it.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like me to, I can email you the presentation.
You can please
have it. Or I think it's probably online, isn't it? The audio of it?
Yes,
yeah, it'd be part of the meeting. Yeah.
The audio is online? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll listen.
And as of today, the county development plan, Ames River Fringe plan, and the 20E agreement are all online. They were all there previously. They were just hidden. Some term our website developer uses. So we unpublished and republished. So it's all there. So that's what that is.
Adjourn.
I so move.